Irwin McManus is a pastor and a pretty well-known speaker, perhaps most especially among youth circles. And he was asked to be the featured speaker at a youth retreat and a rally down in Florida on the beach one spring break. So he took his family along for a kind of a working vacation. And one morning he was out on the beach with his son Aaron, and they're walking along, and as they're going through the crowd, all these thousands of kids that have been at this rally, and they're just partying and beach balls and bathing suits and all this, it's commotion on the beach. And he's walking along with his son Aaron. He's got him by the hand, and their progress through the crowd is slowed because the kids keep recognizing him and coming up and wanting to shake his hand and talk to him and get to know him and all this kind of thing. And out of the corner of his eye, he sees a man who is a double amputee heading down toward the ocean on special crutches that allow him to walk. And he gets down to the water and, swims around or something, and he's on his way back to the hotel on these special crutches, and apparently the slope of the sand or something made it tricky for him, and he fell down. Now, Irwin saw it, but he didn't think his son Aaron had seen it, because nobody apparently had seen it. And he was really intent on getting back to the hotel, so he took his hand and said, "Come on, son, let's go." And Aaron said to his dad, "I have to go help that man." And Irwin said those words just pierced his heart. And he couldn't move. He was so ashamed. And he recognized that his son had heard from God. He had recognized the divine moment. And as he let go of his hand, Aaron ran down there and tried to help this man up, but he was not strong enough to do it. But more of the kids saw what was going on, and they went down, and working together, they got him up on his crutches and got him to the hotel deck. And Irwin was motivated to write a book about seizing divine moments, because he knew his son had recognized the divine moment, and he had shut his eyes to that same moment. And my guess is that most of us have felt that same way. As we play the tape back at the end of the day, we think, "Oh man, if I had just done a little differently in that conversation, or if I had just stopped to help that person by the side of the road, if I just said a word of comfort to that person that came up in prayer, or whatever it is," and we realize that we consistently or far too frequently for our comfort ignore or miss altogether the divine moments. Well, there was a time when Jesus had a kind of a practical teaching lesson with his apostles about how to recognize those moments and respond to them more effectively. And I thought maybe if we could look at that together, we might learn from it as his followers so that we might be able to do better on those. Fair enough? Let's turn to chapter 9 of John. And we're going to read the first five verses of chapter 9. Wherever Jesus went, he was teaching by his example as well as by his words. And this is one of those times. As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, that this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus, "but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Now, this chapter has such a powerful and compelling story about how Jesus healed this man who was born blind, and the subsequent argument that the man got into with the temple authorities and the religious folks, that most of the time when we read this chapter, we rush right past these first five verses, getting to the good stuff. But if you will, let's slow down this morning and cool our jets. Let's not rocket past these first five verses just yet. We'll get to the blind guy later. But let's look at what Jesus was teaching his disciples about having the mindset of a follower of Jesus, the mindset of a disciple. If you have a different mindset, it changes what you see. Changes how you see what you see. Changes what you do. It changes how you do what you do. Have you ever noticed what happens if you put on a uniform? My son went to the prom this year. And I don't know whether they put some sort of a structural support in that thing. It was impossible for him to slouch in a tuxedo. A soldier puts on a uniform and he walks through town and he sees different things. He does different things because it's a different mindset when you put on that uniform. I've discovered that something different happens to ladies when they put on red hats. There's a difference between a little kid riding his bike to the park and a little kid with shoulder pads on and a helmet riding his bike to the park. And the difference is a mindset. And the mindset changes what you tend to see and how you see it. Changes what you tend to do and how you do it. And Jesus is teaching his disciples in this short segment of John 9 how to have the mindset of a disciple. It starts with what we see. And it says here, as they went along, we tend to think of going along as the kind of the spaces between the important stuff in life. But as far as Jesus is concerned, as he went along was the important time in life. This was not a, you know, there's not gaps between the important stuff. It's all part of it. And they're going along and he sees a blind man. Why is it extraordinary that Jesus would see this blind man? Well, think about it. He was the most famous, most infamous man in Jerusalem at the time. He had just personally disrupted the Feast of Tabernacles. And his name was on everybody's lips. The rumors were swirling through town about him. Throngs of people wanted to get close to him, wanted to meet him, wanted to talk to him, wanted to touch him. He was the most important figure in Jerusalem at that time. Well, you know from regular life what happens to people when they become famous. They tend to isolate or insulate themselves from the rest of us. They set up safeguards. They learn not to make eye contact with us. They, you know, have bodyguards or do things so that it's possible for them to get to where they're going without being constantly disrupted. Tom Cruise can't go into the supermarket and buy a quart of milk. Can't do it. Be a nightmare. And so as people become more famous, they separate themselves. And the only people that get through that boundary are the people that are more important. But Jesus sees this blind guy, this beggar, that everybody else has stopped seeing. What's more, Jesus was in great danger, and he knew it. There had been threats on his life. Just a short time earlier, he'd escaped from an angry mob up at the temple that wanted to bash his brains in. Now, you know, when you're in danger, you see different things. You're watching out for different things. You ever been driving in your car? This is a ridiculous example. It's not really danger. You're driving in your car, and you're whipping down the freeway looking for your exit, and you glance in the rear view, and there's a state trooper. Now what? Oh, set up a little straighter, hands at the 10 and 2, check the speedometer, and you whip right past your exit. But Jesus saw the blind man. He noticed him. You know, he saw him, he went over to him. He got close. He knew what that man needed because he saw him. And Jesus, by example, was teaching his disciples that the mindset of a disciple is to see like Jesus sees. You ever notice if you go on a bird walk with somebody who's really good at it, watching birds, then he starts to point them out to you. Pretty soon, as you go along, you start to see birds that you had never would have seen before because of the interest of that man. Same thing following Jesus. disciples, followers of Jesus, start to see through his eyes. Who does Jesus see? There is no pair of eyes that you will ever see in this world behind which does not exist a soul that matters deeply to our Savior. He saw the ostracized woman at the well. He saw the sin-sick teenager chained up in the tombs. He saw the man who traded all of his self-respect for money and started collecting taxes. Most amazing, he saw me. He sees you. And we, as we follow him, you start looking through his eyes. Because the mindset of a disciple changes what we see. Also changes how we see what we see. Because the disciples here, they said, well, Master, who sinned? You know, who was at fault here that this guy is blind? Was it he himself or was it his parents? Because he was born that way. There was a theology loose in that region in those days that connected suffering and sin. Suffering was interpreted to be the consequences of sin. So in other words, if you saw somebody who was blind or suffering in some other way, you'd say, well, he had it coming. You could kind of dismiss him. You could kind of keep him at arm's length and insulate yourself from him emotionally, because after all, if he hadn't have been such a sinner, it wouldn't have happened. Now, it is true that some sins do lead directly to consequences that cause suffering. I mean, if you touch a hot stove, you're going to burn your hand, and sin sometimes works that way. And it is also true that all of the suffering in this planet can in one way or another be attributed to sin in the planet. But Jesus says to his disciples, neither this guy nor his parents sinned that he was born blind. Now, he's not saying that they weren't sinners. Not saying that they were perfect. He's saying that's not the point. That's not the point. See, you tend to look, he says to his disciples, you tend to look at suffering as a penalty. You need to train yourself to look at suffering as an opportunity for God to display his powerful work in the life of that person who's suffering. I think the most obvious example of this kind of eyesight and this kind of interpreting what we see is Mother Teresa. In India, so the theology of karma is that if you see suffering, do not help. Because that person needs to go through that suffering in order to balance their karmic ledger. In a previous life, they did something that required them to suffer. And so now if you help them out of that suffering, then they're not going to pay their debt and it won't balance. So they'll never make it to nirvana. And so in India, millions of people are, you know, just laying on a sidewalk suffering. And people walk right by without any thought of helping. Because it would be wrong. But Mother Teresa, one day, had a divine moment. She looked down in a gutter and there was this deformed, emaciated, starving wretch lying in the sewage in a gutter. And this woman knelt down and saw in that man one of the least of these. So an opportunity for her to minister to her Lord by ministering to him. And she began to rub him and comfort him and eventually get him some help. And in that divine moment with that first one was unleashed a ministry that had worldwide repercussions, because she didn't see that man and dismiss him because of the penalty. She saw in him the opportunity for God to display his power on the canvas of that man's suffering. So disciples, it's a whole different mindset. As we follow Jesus, we see what he sees. And we see how he sees. It's a difference in what we see and how we see it. Not according to the penalty. And dismissing people, well, they had it coming. If they, you know, if they hadn't done that, they wouldn't have been in that fix. No, we see it as an opportunity for God to rescue a soul that he cares deeply about. Well, obviously, if you change what you see and how you see it, it's going to make a big change in what you do. And quite frankly, that's the reason that it's hard for many people to submit to start seeing what Jesus sees and how he sees it. Because it seems overwhelming. If we would change what we would do, we would be overwhelmed with what we would do, it seems to us, in our fear. But Jesus says, as long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Jesus says, not I must do the work, not you must do the work, we must do the work. That's our marching orders as disciples, as followers of Jesus. We must take our cues, our assignments from our Heavenly Father. Well, what does that mean then? Well, we have to listen for God to show us what are the divine moments in our life and then respond to them. We say, well, I've never heard an audible voice of God. How do I know that it's a moment is a divine moment? Well, you know what? That's not your problem. That's God's problem. If he wants you to hear from him, it's his job to make sure you hear it. It's your job to listen. It's your problem to be alert and ready. Last week I saw this show on PBS. They were training British spies. Now, I don't know for the life of me why they showed this on television, because you assume that that would kind of disqualify every single person they showed. But nevertheless, it was fascinating to see how they were training spies. And one of the exercises they did with these kids that were learning to be a spy is to send them down to the train station. They say, now go down there and meet your contact, and he'll tell you what to do next. But they did not tell him who the contact was or anything about the contact. What they wanted them to do was go down there and discover who the contact was by observation. And so these kids descended on this train station, alert to everything. I mean, everybody they looked at with new and greedy eyes. I mean, they were just kind of, you know, is it you? Is it you? Is it you? And they, you know, they were just paying attention. And disciples following Jesus need to have that kind of mindset, paying attention to God. God, is this the moment? Is this what you want me to? You want me to go help that man struggling on his crutches? Is that my assignment? Well, I don't know, maybe you're a little bit like me. Do you kind of resent those guys with the cardboard signs? I struggle with those guys, because I know full well they're scam artists. And it seems to me that if I started acting like this, and really paying attention to God and stuff, I would do nothing but stop and help guys with cardboard signs who were going to take advantage of me. Wouldn't it be overwhelming? Well, you ask that question, imagine how Mother Teresa would feel. You know, there's more people in need in Calcutta than we've ever seen cardboard signs in our lifetime. But nevertheless, we need to know if you're taking your assignments from God, your marching orders from God, God does not assign you everything any more than he assigns everybody to what he has assigned to you. It would be foolish for him to do so. God does not want you doing something that's not your assignment, any more than he wants somebody else doing something that is your assignment. I was at a concert back when I was in the sound business. We were doing sound for Gladys Knight and the Pips one night, and it was a convention for the upper crust of a hospital staff, fancy hospital. And so this banquet hall was filled with doctors, mucky muck doctors. I mean, they were dressed to the nines, and their wives, and they were all decked out and everything. And the entertainment that night was going to be Gladys Knight and the Pips. And before the entertainment started, the head cheese of the whole outfit got up to say a few words of greeting, and he fainted. Now, what happens in a public setting when somebody faints? Is there a doctor in the house? Well, the whole blooming place was full of doctors. And so they all jumped to their feet as a man and they rushed the stage. It was the most comical thing. And they're pushing each other out of the way. Get back, I'm a doctor. Well, that's what it looked like if God assigned everybody to everything. We're to take our cues from God. And that's not a cop-out, because remember, we're to be listening alertly for His voice and pouncing on what He tells us to do. Well, then there's another drawback or a reason for the timid to pull back and say, well, I don't know if I can do that. If I change my whole mindset so that I'm looking through the eyes of Jesus and seeing people like this blind beggar that everybody else had stopped seeing, they couldn't even recognize if he was the same guy after he got healed. So he was part of the landscape and Jesus saw him. If I'm seeing like that, and if I'm not looking in terms of he had it coming or the penalty and keeping myself emotionally separated from him, but being able to see the opportunity that God has with that soul. And if I'm eagerly listening for God's assignment, what happens if he assigns me and I don't know what I'm doing? What if he says, go help that guy with the crutches and I'm not strong enough? What happens if he says, go say a word to that woman who's weeping in the bus stop and I don't know what to say? Jesus says, as long as it is day, we must work. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. In other words, the day is when Jesus is present. The night is when you're on your own. So if God gives you an assignment, how you do what you do needs to change as well as what you do. And how you do what you do has to be done in the presence and through the power of Jesus. He lives inside us as believers. And if we go off half-cocked to do it in our own judgment of what's the best thing to do, or we can handle this, I won't disturb Jesus about this, nothing will happen. He says, remain in me, I'll remain in you, and you'll bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. But when the divine moment comes, because you have changed your mindset to see what Jesus sees, change your mindset so how you see it has changed. Change your mindset so you're listening for God's voice. And he said, go and do that. Then you need to be in prayer right that moment. Lord Jesus, take over. You do this. Use my hands as yours. Use my heart as yours. Use my eyes, my ears, my feet. Allow me to be a sharpened tool in your hand to carve this the way you want. And don't let me get in your way. I want to close this with one example that I clipped out of the paper. A divine moment. This is a letter to the editor by a woman named Bonnie Lee Glantz. On Friday, February 4th, there was an article in the paper about a motorcycle accident on Colorado Highway 52. The occupant of the motorcycle was John Lee. He was critically injured during this accident, in which some people chose to just drive around. Reading that particular fact was disturbing to many, and I'm writing today to tell everyone the part that the paper did not include. For every car that drove past, there was twice that many that did stop to offer help. Some directed traffic, others offered assistance wherever they could. 911 was called and help was on the way. While waiting for help to arrive, a 12-year-old young lady took her mother's hand, ran across a small field to where John Lee lay conscious and aware. She told her mother that they needed to pray. They did just that while waiting for the ambulance to arrive. And while the young lady prayed that day, she included one very specific prayer. That prayer was that this man, John Lee, would not suffer any brain damage. Well, Miss Nicole Larson, your prayers were answered. I know, because I am John Lee's daughter. I want to tell you what a brave and precious and loving person you are. You helped save my father's life. And for that, I am eternally grateful. Thank you, Nicole. And thank you, everyone who stopped to help my father. What a powerful difference that lady, 12 years old, made in this world. Because she recognized the divine moment, and she seized it. I mean, what can a 12-year-old girl do for a nearly fatal motorcycle accident? We must pray. And she did what she did in the power of Jesus Christ.